This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Crime, corruption, extortion. It's all being levelled at one of Australia's biggest unions, the CFMEU. And now attention is turning to the Victorian government. How much did it know about what was potentially going on? Is it true billions and billions of taxpayers' money could have been lost to corruption? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we want to hear what it's like working in the construction industry right now with all of these very hectic allegations flying around.
I feel like there's already a little bit of a label on us that we're potentially confronting ourselves to some clients. In my field, relationships with my clients could be make or break between winning and losing jobs.
Yeah, I'm keen to hear from you. If you are a tradie, if you're in construction, get in touch. It's all anonymous. I just really want to know if this is something you're talking about at the moment. Are you surprised by these allegations? Are you worried about the reputation of your industry? Message in 0439 757 555. Later, Lunar New Year, the year of the fire horse, is here. What does that mean? Is it something we should be excited about or freaking out about? We're going to learn more about the significance as millions celebrate. That's coming up later. First, though,
this is Hack.
11 ISIS families have been turned back after leaving their Syrian camp.
On Triple J.
What kind of obligation do you think we as a country have to get Australians with links to terrorist groups like Islamic State back here from Syria? It's not a new question, and it's actually a question a lot of countries have been facing for years. We're talking about it because dozens of Australians with links to IS, including children, attempted to leave a camp in Syria with the intention of coming back to Australia this week, but they were stopped by Syrian authorities. So what should happen here? If you've got thoughts, I'm keen to hear the message in 0439 757 555. Do you think our government does have a responsibility to bring these Australians home? Alice Angeloni's been looking into it.
My mother would have said, if you make your bed, you lie in it.
And they put them in these camps where they've been held without trial, some of them for more than 10 years.
In Syria right now, there's a group of 2,500 people, mostly foreign nationals, who are basically trapped. Heidi Pett is an Australian journalist in Aleppo, northern Syria. She did an interview on Radio National Breakfast this morning.
Some of these countries don't actually want their nationals back, right? The UK has gone so far as to strip some people of their citizenship.
In this group, there are 34 Australians, made up of women and children who are the families of jailed or killed Islamic State fighters. And this week, accompanied by Australian relatives who had travelled to Syria, they left the Al-Roj refugee camp with a plan to eventually get home to Australia. But not long into the trip, officials turned them around.
The Syrian government told them that they weren't allowed to cross to government-held territory, and so they had gone back to Roj camp.
So how did these people get here? Heidi Pett was in the camp 10 days ago and explains the backstory.
These are women and some children who are alleged to have travelled with their husbands, who are suspected of being ISIL fighters, to parts of Syria and Iraq that were under control of the caliphate, dating back to, 2014.
So back in about 2014, the terrorist Islamic State was inspiring people all over the world to join its fight.
ISIS is trying to recruit young Americans.
Recruited around 200 Australians.
That included young Australians who went either to fight or to marry the men fighting.
Thousands were detained by the Kurdish-led SDF as they pushed ISIL back with American air support. And as they took that territory back, they started gathering up these women and children from Syria, from Iraq, and also all of the foreigners who had travelled to the caliphate.
5 years after that, the Islamic State caliphate fell. And in the years since, the women who survived have basically been imprisoned.
We know that some of them have had health problems.
Inside the Al-Roj camp is a place called Australia Street.
Humanitarian organisations have described the conditions in the camp as dire.
Speaking to women in the camp, Heidi says she was told some still subscribe to ISIS ideology.
Lots and lots of people have been calling for these camps to be closed, for the people to be sent home, for them to be de-radicalised if that's what they need, and for the people who, some of whom may actually be victims of trafficking, to receive the psychological support to go home.
So are they going to be let back into Australia?
We won't be providing assistance or repatriation.
Well, while the women are not currently accused of any crimes in Syria, the Australian government says they will face close scrutiny from police and intelligence agencies if they return. But Australia won't actually help them. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, says the government does not have that responsibility.
Australian law applies and there are obligations that Australian officials have, but we want to make it clear if there are any breaches of the law, they will face the full force.
The Shadow Communications Minister, Sarah Henderson, wants the federal government to block Australian citizens returning home if they've subscribed to IS ideology.
And if these are people who subscribed to ISIS ideology, who subscribe to this extremist ideology, then they should not be returning to Australia.
The Shadow Home Affairs and Immigration Minister, John O'Dunham, says the government should use a temporary exclusion order to stop the group entering Australia.
They are not friends of our way of life. We should be pulling out every stop to prevent them from coming back and causing this risk to our society.
Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke says the government is getting advice about whether the threshold for temporary exclusion orders has been met.
Hack on Triple J.
Ali Angeloni reporting now. A lot of opinions coming through on this one. Someone says, no way. Absolutely not. Another person says, did the women and children who were associated with Islamic State have the freedom to decide whether they wanted to go to that camp in Syria? That person says. Someone else, we have absolutely no responsibility for these people. And then another person says, how do we assess if they share Australian values? Yeah, look, there's definitely lots of opinions on this one. I feel like we will be hearing a little bit more on it. Politicians from all sides have been asked about it. You heard the Prime Minister asked about it earlier today. Can expect a few more questions this week.
Hack.
Bikie links drug deals and women were apparently hired to strip at site sheds.
On Triple J.
We're going to move on now and talk about these reports out of Victoria. And I'll start with this figure, $15 billion. That is the amount of money that Victorian taxpayers could have lost to corruption. The revelation made recently as part of investigations into one of Australia's biggest unions, the CFMEU. Now, they're supposed to look after workers in the construction industry, but the last couple of years, they've been plagued by allegations of blackmail, drugs, corruption going on all the way to the top. I'm keen to hear from you if you work in construction. What do you make of all of this reporting? Like, does it worry you? Are you surprised? Are you worried about the way it makes your industry look? And are you talking about it with other people on site? Is it something that keeps coming up? Hit the text line, 0439 757 555. You can keep it anonymous. I know this is sensitive stuff. People often don't want to share their opinions on it publicly, but I am keen to hear what tradies are talking about when it comes to this. We're talking about it right now because a new report has brought all of these issues into the spotlight, as Louise Mylan reports from Melbourne.
I couldn't see myself doing anything else.
Tristan's a carpenter in his 20s, working in Melbourne, and he's pumped on his job.
What do you like about it?
Everything.
But Tristan's industry is in the thick of a major scandal.
It's scary. There are things set on fire. There are people who are hurt.
That's anti-corruption expert Geoffrey Watson. He was given the job of looking into the Construction, Forestry and Maritime Employer Union, the CFMEU. And last week, parts of a previously hidden report he'd finished were made public.
The government was really beholden to the CFMEU.
2 years ago, the CFMEU was forced into administration by the federal government with allegations of violence, blackmail and corruption. That means the government forced union leaders to step down and appointed someone to oversee the union. At the time, Federal Minister Murray Watt said this was a big deal.
This represents the strongest action available to the government and the strongest action ever taken by a government against an Australian union or employer group.
Now we know what Geoffrey Watson found, and some of the details feel like something from a mafia movie.
The people who were benefiting from this were criminals.
Basically, Geoffrey Watson reckons union figures in Victoria blackmailed workers, bullied bosses into paying people for work they didn't do, helped bikie gangs sell drugs on government construction sites, and siphoned off Victorian government money into their own pockets. A lot of money. Geoffrey Watson reckons $15 billion all up. And he says when he tried to talk to the CFMEU's former boss, John Setka, he got this text.
I warn you, Watson, you should hope you never cross my path. So go and f*** your mum and Irving's mum and leave me alone, you f***ing fat, ugly c***.
Watson also name-dropped other union officials who he said were corrupt and had bikie ties, like a guy called Johnny Two Guns Walker, who was made a health and safety official. So what's the Victorian government saying about this? Well, Premier Jacinta Allen reckons we need to treat some of Geoffrey Watson's findings with a grain of salt, including the estimate of $15 billion.
That is a claim that the administrator has said is not well tested or properly founded.
But the opposition's hit out at Jacinta Allen.
This is a Premier who never takes responsibility for her actions.
Last week, a Victorian task force investigating the union arrested one of the guys in Watson's report, a former union official called Joel Leavitt, who police say is also a member of the Bandidos bikie gang. So what does all this mean if you're a young tradie? Well, the CFMEU is still operating while it's under administration, and they're still posting on TikTok, like this vid promoting union-backed apprenticeships.
To be honest with you, it's probably the best decision I've ever made. I've got a job for life, and I would do this all over again.
Zach Smith has been the union's leader while it's under administration, but he's just stepped down. A lot of comments about his resignation refer to this being a tough time for the CFMEU. I asked the CFMEU for an interview, but I didn't get a response.
I'm doing a bathroom renovation.
Back to Tristan. He's not a union member, partly because he works on private houses, not on the big government and commercial builds where unions tend to have more of a presence. But he reckons this saga has rocked the whole industry.
I suppose it does come up on site a fair bit during Smoko or whatever. The discussion's definitely there.
And the drama gives his sector a bad rep.
I feel like there's already a little bit of a label on us that we're potentially confronting ourselves to some clients. In my field, relationships with my clients could be make or break between winning and losing jobs.
But Tristan's hopeful airing out the dirty laundry will keep the industry moving forward.
If we just keep working hard, ticking along, I think it'll be a great career path for all those tradies who are entering the field and those who have been in it for a little bit now.
Hack on Triple J.
Louise Mylan reporting there from Melbourne. We're hearing a lot from you on the text line right now. Someone says engineers who work on construction have it just as bad. We're constantly threatened to sign off non-compliant things for builders and contractors, and that signature ties us to it personally for life. Another person just says, shut down the CFMEU. Someone else says, I'm a timber worker. CFMEU give us all a bad name. They give unions a bad name. We've got Darcy on the line with us. Darcy, what are your thoughts on this? You're a timber worker.
Yeah, you might have just read my text out then. I run a small sawmilling business, and I've always been tempted to join a union, but after seeing the CFMEUs, you know, the way they operate, it just puts me off. And it's sad that, you know, historically unions have been a great sort of stand against power, and it seems like they've been corrupted here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really serious allegations, Darcy. Is it something you're speaking to a lot of your mates about that's coming up in conversation?
Yeah, it comes up a bit just in sort of, just like sad to see that unions should be standing up for what's right, and then to see them sort of, acting in impunity and not looking after workers. It's quite sad, and it makes me, I want to be a part of the union, but I haven't joined for those reasons.
Yeah. And a lot of people are saying that, Darcy. Look, thank you so much for having a chat with us. I really do appreciate you messaging in. Someone else says this underworld aggression makes it so scary to stand up to the union, hence why no one does. There is another side to this story, because there's a lot of political pressure that's building around it as well, especially on, obviously, the Victorian government, Premier Jacinta Allen. Let's get into that chat a little more now with Benita Kolovos, who is Guardian Australia's Victorian state correspondent. She's with us now. Benita, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Thank you so much for having me.
It does not feel like this controversy is going anywhere anytime soon. Is that accurate, do you reckon?
No, I think you're absolutely right, and it feels like the pressure is only going to increase on the Premier this week with Parliament sitting.
What kind of pressure is the Premier facing? Like, in question time today, I imagine she was getting a few questions. What are people wanting to get from her?
So I think there's different elements here, and they're all kind of combining at once, which definitely builds momentum. You've got one of the main issues is the Shadow Attorney General James Newbury he's written to IBAC for an investigation into the Watson report and the redacted sections, which includes that $15 billion figure that he's given as a rough estimate to how much the corruption within the CFMEU has cost taxpayers. And then the opposition leader, Jess Wilson, has also called for a royal commission into the true extent of the cost to taxpayers and what the Premier and her ministers knew and when. Then on top of that, you've got the Greens who are calling for what they've described as follow the money powers, which would give IBAC, the anti-corruption watchdog, the power to investigate corrupt conduct by third parties and subcontractors that are connected to the government, because at the moment they don't have the power to do that. They can only investigate government. Interesting element there is the opposition say they support such an idea, but they're not going to support the Greens amendment.
And it feels like there's no way that the government can really shift attention here. Like I saw at a press conference today, the Premier was just thrown so many questions and it feels like she has to answer.
Yeah, absolutely. They did definitely try to move on. They were at Footscray Hospital this morning, which is opening tomorrow, and I think they'll be back there multiple times this week. I think there was one or two questions on the hospital before the entire press conference was dominated by this.
I mean, is someone covering Victorian politics, Benita? I mean, a lot of people listening now aren't up to speed with what's going on day to day, but you have a new opposition leader there. Does it feel like Premier Jacinta Allen's future is really in doubt here, that this or other issues could really end up bringing down this government?
That's the tricky bit, right? Because it's not the first time that we've had allegations of corruption. We've had the former Premier Daniel Andrews, his name, and he was interviewed multiple times by IBAC in the past. And I think the nickname Teflon Dan came about because none of it ever really stuck on him. And, you know, we haven't seen Jacinta Allen face such scrutiny before. And I think there's an added level of it here too, because she was Transport Infrastructure Minister at the time that a lot of these allegations were happening. So I'm not sure, is she going to have the same non-stick qualities as Daniel Andrews, yet to be seen.
And Jacinta Allen has tried to prove that she did the right thing, right, by forwarding allegations to the Anti-Corruption Commission. But that has kind of backfired. What happened there?
Yeah, so that's really interesting. On Sunday, when the opposition were calling for a royal commission into these allegations, the Premier released her letter to IBAC that she made in 2024. And that was really around the time that the AGES Building Bad investigation came out and a lot of these allegations came to light. You know, I think that was an attempt to say, look, we referred this on to the authorities. But this morning, the former IBAC commissioner said that they didn't have the powers to investigate. And we also found out later today that the correspondence that the Premier sent, she got a reply back in October of 2024, so pretty soon after, saying that they couldn't investigate. So, yeah, I think that one did backfire.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Victorian correspondent at Guardian Australia, Benita Kolovos. We're talking about all this pressure building on the Victorian government, Premier Jacinta Allen, to answer questions about allegations of corruption linked to the CFMEU, the construction union. Big thoughts on the text line, as expected. Someone saying, so sick of all this bull that is spoken about our industry. Another person with similar thoughts saying, what a load of bullshit. We need the CFMEU to keep workers safe. But then there are other people. Someone says, I'm concerned about this being used to undermine unions more broadly. Another person saying gangs have had their hands in the unions for a lot longer than everyone is thinking. And someone else saying, we need unions now more than ever. People need to keep in mind that the CFMEU is an isolated case and other unions are continuing to do the same great work that they always have. Let's get back to Benita from Guardian Australia. Benita, this $15 billion figure that we've just been talking about seems extraordinary, right? Do we know if that's accurate?
That's also a really good question. So this $15 billion figure comes from a redacted bit of the Jeffrey Watson report. So this report was written at the request of the administration of the CFMEU to get to the bottom of what had really happened. And there was a chapter in there where Jeffrey Watson estimates that the big build, all the government infrastructure projects in Victoria, cost about $100 billion. He spoke to a bunch of experts and he says a very, very rough estimation is between 10 to 30% of cost blowouts could be linked to the CFMEU's conduct on building sites. Then he said, you know, I'm going to go into the middle of that percentage and estimate 15%. And then, you know, if you get the $100 billion, it becomes $15 billion. So even he admitted it was a very rough calculation. I've spoken to some experts who think that that's very, very high. The government saying it is untested, and actually the whole reason it was redacted, according to the CFMEU administrator, was because he wasn't satisfied that that figure was tested or well-founded.
It's so interesting because, yes, some people are saying, well, it's way too high, but then obviously you've got other people saying it could just be the tip of the iceberg. It could be more than that. It's not just Victorian politics, obviously, because I know the Prime Minister was also asked about this today, and he has said the Victorian government is doing all it can. Is there this concern, do you think, within Labor that these allegations of corruption will prove a problem for the party as a whole, like spread beyond Victoria?
I think that's a tricky question because this came about in 2024, right before we headed to the 2025 election. A lot of this information had already come to light and it didn't seem to have a dent on the federal Labor government. So it's hard to say if the same will be applied here because it obviously involves Victorian government projects.
And just finally, Benita, is there any talk about, you know, what all this means for the union, the future of the union, that kind of thing?
Look, I've been speaking to some people, you know, behind the scenes, and they seem to think that the CFMEU will probably be in administration for quite some time. It remains to be seen when they'll be able to join the Victorian Labor Party again. I know a lot of people in the union movement who are really disappointed by this, and they don't want to be tarred with those same allegations that we're reading about.
Yeah, we're hearing from a lot of those people right now, actually, Benita. Look, thank you so much for coming on and explaining sort of the politics behind this and how it's all playing out. I really appreciate your analysis. Benita Kolovos from Guardian Australia, thanks for coming on Hack.
Thank you so much.
And still so many messages coming through. Someone says you need strong people in unions to stand up for what's right, not be pressured by government or builders. Someone else says, I was working on a big build project as a graduate engineer. The stuff I saw on site was insane. One of the reasons I got burnt out of the construction industry. Another person, I'm on a non-union section of the Inland Rail project right now, and the union section of that same project is on $20 more per hour. That person says, and another person says, we need them, but they can't be left unchecked. Lots of thoughts coming through. All right, we're going to move on, switch things up a bit.
You're listening to Hack. If you are watching this on February 16th, 17th, or 18th, listen up. Everything is about to change on Triple J.
Are you a bit of a dog? Bit of a snake? Pig? Maybe a dragon. You know what I'm talking about. Lunar New Year, and it is Lunar New Year. Millions around the world are celebrating. Maybe you're one of them. If you are, I want to hear how. Message in 0439 757 555. I feel like I personally have been seeing more about Lunar New Year on my feed this year than previously. And I'm curious as to why that might be the case. It's good to see so much about it, but I still have a lot of questions. So let's ask our friend Maggie Zhao, fashion editor-at-large at Broadsheet and co-host of the Culture Club pod. Maggie, so good to have you on as always.
Be here and a happy new year to you, Dave.
Happy Lunar New Year. Can you explain what Lunar New Year is? Like, who is celebrating right now?
Yeah, of course. So Lunar New Year marks the first new moon of the lunar calendar, and it's celebrated in so many different countries. So definitely not just China, but Vietnam, Korea, a lot of different places have their own twists on it. But I love Lunar New Year. It's a time for like family reunion, also to honor our ancestors. And it's a time where you're supposed to like beef up your luck and prosperity.
Okay, we can all use a bit of beefing up of our luck and prosperity. How do you celebrate with family generally, Maggie? Is it like a really busy time?
Oh, it's actually one of my favourites. So last night, Lunar New Year Eve, is when we all get together for a big family reunion dinner. So everyone gathers at my parents' house and we have a big hot pot. Even though it was 34 degrees in Melbourne, we still persevered. And then we played a lot of games. So we played Mahjong as well as some other fun kind of gambling style games, but with Monopoly money.
Okay, we love that. We love that. It sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, people's introduction or maybe their whole knowledge of Lunar New Year, maybe talking about the zodiac. I'm keen to hear how that all works, Maggie. What can you tell us? And especially about this year, the year of the Firehorse.
Yeah, of course. Well, similar to kind of your usual Western style horoscope, there are 12 kind of different animals or cycles that we have. And actually, Dave, a little birdie told me that you are a dragon.
I'm a dragon. Look it up. He was born in 34 BC. Yeah, dragon.
Yeah, and in terms of just having the animals as well, we've got elements that we cycle through. So there's 5 of them that goes from wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. And as you said, the fire horse of this year is causing such a ruckus. Everyone's really getting behind it.
There's so much like excitement about what we can expect this year. What do you think we should be looking out for as we head into this year of the fire horse?
Yeah, I feel like the name kind of encapsulates it. So the energy we're embodying is a lot of passion and energy. That we're talking about acting almost without hesitation. So we're seeing more bold action, maybe some more impulse actions, which could be good or bad. So I think it's like, it's be careful with it, is what I think.
Like just, it could be too powerful, actually. Be very, very careful. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Maggie Zhao from the Culture Club podcast. We're talking about Lunar New Year celebrations well underway around the world. Millions and millions of people celebrating in a really, really big way. Maggie, one of the interesting things that I've been seeing and we've been chatting about in the Hack office is this random element to this with a Harry Potter character becoming the mascot for Lunar New Year, Draco Malfoy. Why is he involved in all of this? I'm very curious to get your explanation.
Oh my God, I love that Draco Malfoy is officially, apparently, Lunar New Year's official mascot for this year. And the thing is, Chinese people, we love a bit of phonetic, auspicious wordplay. Let me explain. So just to back up first, you might have heard that the number 4 is quite unlucky in Chinese culture. It's because the word si sounds like death, right? So they're like, avoid the number 4 because it sounds like death. Now I'll take you to Malfoy. In Mandarin, Malfoy is transliterated into, and pardon my pronunciation, but fool. And the first character means horse, and the final character, fool, means fortune or blessing. So Malfoy kind of translates to horse fortune.
That's amazing. Okay, just definitely not the character of that whole world I would have picked to be this good luck, prosperous symbol. But hey, if it works out and if it all means something really fortunate, of course we're going to take it. I mean, why do you think, Maggie, a lot of people are talking more about Lunar New Year this year, or it's extended to other networks? It's got broader appeal this year.
There's a few things that come to mind. Number one, I think we all like the idea of a fresh start. So perhaps the January 1 reset wasn't enough and we're looking for another time to be like, okay, we're resetting again. And number two, I think China, more people are becoming more interested in China. It's growing as a soft power, especially us in Australia. We can travel there with fewer restrictions as well. So there's been little bits of interest.
I just wanted to ask you quickly about another trend that we've seen kicking around, Maggie, and one that I know that you've commented on recently, this very Chinese time in my life trend. People might have seen it on their socials. What do you think of this? Like, there are a lot of people out there saying, oh, it's just harmless fun. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think where we get into more murky territory, which I'm not the biggest fan of, is the commentary around people quote-unquote turning Chinese or being diagnosed as Chinese, which is actually happening on TikTok and Instagram. Essentially, people are embracing a lot of Chinese adjacent habits, which is great, you know, drinking hot water, maybe eating congee or doing Tai Chi, which is great. I think a lot of people are happy to share culture in that way. But it gets weird when people start putting these labels about, like, I'm becoming Chinese.
You're like, come on, this is enough. Weird, strange, and it's not in the spirit of a fortunate and happy Lunar New Year. So Thank you so much for coming on and having a chat with us, Maggie Zhao. Always appreciate talking to you, and happy Lunar New Year.
Yeah, happy Year of the Horse to you.
Thank you so much. That is all we've got time for on Hack for now, but we do have a lot of messages still coming through on a few of the stories we've been talking about. The CFMEU one, lots of people messaging in, whether they're union members or people who work in construction, other industries. Someone says, I'm 100% pro-union, but I go to work each day petrified for my safety due to the behaviour of the CFMEU. And other people also talking about this ISIS story, Australians linked to Islamic State and whether they should be helped to get back home. We're going to be hearing a lot more about that this week, no doubt. That is all we've got time for on Hack for Now, though.